Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world, and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week this show will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, I'm looking for some show ambassadors. I'd love it if you could forward at least one of our shows to your social media group or to someone you know who can benefit from a particular show. Now, I want you to know that we truly appreciate it, and this is just another way that we, as a group, can make a positive difference in the lives of others. With me once again as guest co-host is our International Ambassador to Kindness, who is also making a positive difference in the lives of others, Gabriella Von Rey. Gabriella is an author of With All My Might, I Can Find My Might, and Watch Your Delivery. She is seen on national TV and speaks at school assemblies and corporate events across the United States, spreading her message. We, as a society, have dropped the ball of human kindness. Will you help me pick it up? Gabriella, I'm so happy you could join us again today. And before we get to our topic today, can you share a little bit about what's going on that's new and exciting in your life?
Well, first of all, thanks, Alan, for having me on again. It's always a pleasure to be here. And look at your smiling face on Monday morning.
Thank you.
I'm really excited. I'm smiling from ear to ear because last week I mentioned that the Dare to Be Kind global movement was going live soon. Mm-hmm. We had some technical glitches. We're going live on the 19th, Thursday. So everyone jump on board because this is, for me, really a passion for years, but to see it come to fruition, to see that while sharing our stories, just like you said, ambassadors, right, we're looking for kindness instigators that are willing to share their stories so that others don't feel so alone and that others feel like they have more confidence, because you know what? We are all struggling.
Yeah, I know. And I'm looking forward to it as well. And I love the fact that this is, for everybody out there, this is a global kindness revolution. This is a way in which we can all come together. And I've talked many times about the fact of wanting to surround myself, surround my family with people that are kind. Mm-hmm. And what better way to do that than to take it worldwide? And you know, at least within my lifetime, I can't think of a time in which we needed it more.
And it's really simple. It's just one moment, one person, one kindness, be the difference. That's
well,
it.
Tell them how they can get involved.
You can hashtag Dare to Be Kind Movement. You will find us everywhere on social media. And from Thursday on, you can go to the website, daretobekindmovement.com, and just feel free to shoot me a little private message. I will tell you what we do, how I can help you to be part of it. It's really much easier than you think. And for those of you who think that you have to write something, don't be scared. It can be in a picture or it can be in a video, as easy as just recording something on your cell phone.
All right. Now, for everybody out there, I think we have all heard the term break the internet, okay? But when they talk about break the internet, sometimes they're not talking about using maybe the best possible way to do it. Let's break the internet with kindness. So put this information out there. Mark it on your calendar that on Thursday, you're going to go to
daretobekindmovement.com.
There you go. And you're going to tell all your friends to go there. Okay? If you want to break the internet, let's do it with kindness.
Absolutely. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Now, we're going to get to our guest here shortly. Our guest today is Dr. Kate Lund. She is a licensed clinical psychologist and performance coach with more than 15 years of experience. And she has specialized training in medical psychology from Shriners Hospital for Children in Boston, from General Hospital, and Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, all of which are affiliated with Harvard Medical School. And she is an adjunct instructor in psychology at Baxter University in Seattle. Kate is also the author of Bounce, Help Your Child Build Resilience and Thrive in School, Sports, and Life, where she presents her vision of the seven pillars of resilience that children have during the elementary school years, along with specific strategies bolstering the resilient child. Kate, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, I had a chance to go into the book and to look at some of the things. And one of the things that caught my eye right away was, you know, I've read many books in which they outline an issue. What I love is that you talk about the different pillars of it, but you also talk about how we can improve it. And I think that that's great. It's not only something to learn about kind of where our children are at in life or maybe what they're going through, but also how we can be, as parents or as people working with kids, we can be the people that can really help bring out the resilience in them. So thank you for that.
Absolutely, sure.
Now, I guess let's just start with, what motivated you to write this book?
Well, you know, there were really three main things that motivated me to write this book. I've really been interested in resilience for a very long time. I grew up with a medical condition called hydrocephalus, which, you know, caused me to miss a lot of school, have a lot of medical interventions, be in the hospital a good deal. So I had to figure out early, with the help of those around me, of course, how to kind of bounce back from those episodes and move forward despite what might have been going on, you know, with the medical side of things. And I was really fortunate to have a very strong support system that helped me with that early on. So that was the first piece of my interest in resilience. And of course, I went on to become a clinical psychologist, where resilience is really at the cornerstone of my work. I'm really helping folks to find ways to move through and beyond their challenges. We're not ignoring the challenges, but we're finding ways to circumvent, create a new sense of normal when it's necessary, that sort of thing. So that would be the second reason. And then the third reason is, you know, my life as a mom. I have 10-year-old twins, and so I'm able to see sort of up close and personal their trials and tribulations of life in elementary school as they kind of navigate the waters and figure out what they need to do to move through and beyond challenge. So it's really, the book really brings together my perspective in those three areas.
Well, it's interesting when you mention about having twins, because one of our listeners has twins as well. So we have a listener question that has just come in that says, starts out with, what a great topic. It says, my two tween twins, say that four times fast, are heading into high school next year. They were pretty carefree until this year, and now it seems they are beginning to become more insecure day by day, which I attributed to entering high school on the low end of the totem pole. It says, if I purchase your book, would it give me some tips on how to help them gain more confidence?
Sure. You know, the book, as you mentioned up front, is written with the younger student in mind. But the important thing to point out here is that all of the principles, the pillars of resilience that we outline, apply to all of us across the lifespan. So absolutely, there would be tips in there for, you know, the older elementary student, junior high into high school. I've even found the book and the principles laid out in it useful, you know, in the college years. So absolutely. And that's a sort of a perfect point to introduce some of these concepts to your tween twins, because sort of developmentally they're really in a great spot to sort of integrate some of this material along with your guidance.
Um, Hi, Kate. I would love to ask you a little bit more. I would love to ask you a little bit more about the resilience part of it. Why, first of all, are children so resilient? And why does it feel sometimes that when we grow into adulthood that we've lost that resilience?
Right. That's a really great question. And, children are sort of inherently resilient by nature. Given kind of, you know, especially the younger ones, the fact that they're really not thinking as abstractly as we do as we get older, and we move through those different developmental stages. So as you're starting to think about all of the what ifs and the how different pieces can fit together, we can sort of naturally start to question a little bit more. Perhaps confidence can be lowered until we figure out, you know, a new way, a new strategy to put those same pieces together. But it really has to do with the developmental progression and thinking more abstractly with time. And with that comes the whole what-if scenario. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And would it help, for example, if I had a friend who, like you wrote yourself, you know, has such a hard time bouncing back? Would your book help for adults too?
Absolutely. It would just have to be, they would just have to kind of read it with a different frame in mind, because mm-hmm. the stories in the book are written from the younger student perspective. But the pillars, the principles themselves, apply to all of us throughout the lifespan. Say, tolerating frustration, managing emotions, it's important for all of us. And we can certainly use the tips laid out. And that goes for all of the pillars.
It might also just remind us how resilient we were when we were reading it. And it might bring back those memories and kind of re-jog it all, no? That's kind of what I was thinking when you were speaking.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, sort of revisiting these ideas mm-hmm. from earlier years can certainly help us in the here and now as adults or as older students to kind of remember a time when, No, I was able to do that. Yes, okay.
I love that. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Kate.
So, Kate, I mean, is there something that you see that has changed in our culture that we have some of these young people, and I'm thinking young in the sense of maybe high school or early college, you know, that we may be having a lack of resilience? You know, we've coined the new phrase of failure to launch, you know, in the sense of people who maybe aren't feeling as resilient that they can go out there and tackle the world on their own. What do you attribute that to as a psychologist?
Right, and that's a really good point, because there has been a bit of a shift around that very issue. And what we see happening a lot in our work as psychologists, or what I see happening a lot in my work as a psychologist, parents have a tendency, and I'm not saying all parents, and I'm definitely not generalizing, but there is sort of a trend out there to rush in and rescue our children the minute they encounter a struggle or the minute something is hard. And the reality is, we need to allow our children to experience failure. We need to allow them to understand and feel what it's like to not succeed the first time out, such that they can develop sort of more of a flexibility in thinking, more of a ability to tackle the same problem again from a different angle. And by doing that early on and over time, we're preparing our children to be more in a position to thrive as they, you know, enter college and move through into adulthood, that sort of thing. So that would sort of be the trend that I'm seeing, this tendency to rush in and rescue before allowing a child to grapple with that problem on their own initially.
Well, unfortunately, I have a story that that really drives that point home, in which I am that guilty parent. And so it's a story that I had with my oldest son when he was in middle school, and he came home And he described a boy that was considerably larger than him that had bullied him and had come up to him and said, you know, give me $5. And my son said, why? And he said, because I'm hungry and I want some food. I want some lunch and I give me $5. Well, my son said, you know, I don't have $5. I have $3. I can give you that. And he gave him $3 just because he's a very nice young man. And the next mm-hmm. day when he went to school, the boy came up to him and said, give me the other $2 you owe me. And he said, well, I don't owe you any money. And he said, no, you'll give me the other $2. You know, he said, give me the other $2. If you don't give it to me tomorrow, I'm going to beat you up. And so my son comes home and tells me that. So I immediately, okay, I know the principal. I'm going to contact the principal. I'm going to make sure that this doesn't happen. And I start going through all of these things that I think that I'm going to do. And my son says, Dad, I appreciate the fact that you care. Can you just let me handle this? Mm-hmm. I mean, I was so proud. Mm-hmm. I still couldn't quite control myself. So I typed up two copies of a letter that was written to the principal that was outlining the story that my son had told me these last 2 days and said, this is what happened on this day and this is what happened on this day. And so if a fight breaks out on this other day, this is the reason for it. And as it turned out, the boy did make my son go out into the field or whatever, or meet him somewhere and did take a swing at him. And what he didn't realize, even though my son was much smaller, he'd gone through martial arts. So my son was able to put the bigger boy down on the ground. But when the teachers got there, all the teachers saw was my son is now the one that is the one that's still standing. And fortunately, when he went to the when he was taken to the principal, and he said, here, my dad said you might want to read this. And when they read it, they called the other boy in. They found out. They talked to the other kids that crowded around when the fight was going to happen and realized that the other boy had taken a swing and that that my son wasn't the aggressor. But anyway, my point being is that I think if we start at an early age to give them the resilience, they will even correct us when we can't help ourselves to still try to fix things. So if that helps any of the parents out there to know that, you know, that we all may have a part of that in us, but if we've really done the job of building it in our children, hopefully they'll correct us.
But isn't this...
Absolutely. That's a hugely important point, very important point.
Kate, my question is, as a psychologist, what you're saying is, do you think it's due to the fear of the parent, though? Because we're the adult already, and we already know that life has a lot of difficult humps to go over. Is that the reason that we do it? That we kind of diminish their own power almost?
Yeah, you know, it's a very fine line, right? Because, you know, the story about, you know, contacting the principal, wanting to protect our son who might be in a fight, that type of thing. It's human nature, right? We mm-hmm. want to protect our kids. We want to make sure everything is okay. And it can be a fine line because, you know, there was a possibility of a physical altercation or of somebody really getting hurt in that instance. So it's really assessing what the nature of the situation is and moving from there. But, yeah, you know, it's a really fine line. We want to protect our kids. We want to make sure that, you know, nothing goes really badly off track. It's human nature, really. But at the same time, forcing ourselves to take that step back and, you know, to a degree, let kids grapple with those issues that might be going on, while at the same time, making sure that you're engaged in an ongoing dialogue with them about what's happening at school, what their experiences are like. And within that, really making sure that they're coming away with a strong social emotional foundation, sense of self-awareness, the ability to respect and appreciate individual differences, for example. All of these things are so, so important. And it really does come down to striking the balance for us as parents. How much to step in, how much to step out, and how to provide our kids with the most robust toolbox possible to manage their challenges.
You know, Kate, I am so glad that you brought up communication, because that's one of the things that I think that is lacking. And to bring that up and to remind parents out there, communicate with your kids as much as possible. And it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, how was your day today at school? Because, you know, you can get a one-word answer, fine, you know, and then it goes on. But if you change your questions up a little bit to where, what was the most interesting thing about your day today? Okay, you can't say fine to that. You have to go into something. It makes you think. Or, you know, what was the biggest challenge you had today? Or, you know, what was the thing that happened today that hasn't happened in another day? So, yeah, I agree with you. If we can just continue to keep those lines of communication open, we're going to be so far ahead of the game.
Absolutely. And that's such a great point. And really keeping those questions open-ended and making sure that, you know, the child can't get away with that one-word answer, that fine and walk away type of deal. Mm-hmm. If you really want to try to get them to engage. And another one is sort of, what was your biggest win today? You know, that kind of a thing, to help them to start thinking a little bit more in line with gratitude, and kind of help them to notice the things that did go well, as opposed to just the things that were hard or bad or challenging. Not that those things aren't important to address, because they certainly are, but it's oftentimes way too easy to default in that direction, and then the good things are missed, and that's not in anyone's best interest.
You know, you mentioned, or I think actually maybe I did, mention in regards to challenge. So talk a little bit about the importance of them being able to manage their own challenge.
Right. So we want them to be able to manage their own challenge, because really what that does is it begins to instill a sense of confidence in the child, you know, in the young adult, that, okay, so this hard thing happened, but I was able to go away and think about it, and I was able to kind of come back from another angle and try the same thing again, and maybe I didn't succeed fully, but I did better. And in that way, you know, children start to develop a sense of confidence. They start to develop a sense of courage, to try again. They lose a good deal of that sort of fear of failure piece that will kind of hold them down. It gives them the ability to communicate with teachers, communicate with the adults in their life, without having to bring their parents in to help them. And that's such an important skill, in terms of being able to self-advocate later on in school, and particularly, you know, through the college years and beyond. And if we kind of let our children start to grapple with this idea of managing their own challenges early on, they'll be really well equipped in that area of self-advocacy, problem solving, thinking flexibly, thinking out of the box, as they move towards adulthood. And that's so, so important.
What do we do with the children that don't feel that they have that confidence, that feel that the challenge does define them? How do mm-hmm. we help them build the confidence more?
Yeah, and that's a very real scenario, you know, because, mm-hmm. you know, there are kids who sort of at baseline from the get-go are struggling with you know, more intense challenges than perhaps another child might be. So everything that I'm talking about, though, applies to all kids across the spectrum. But for the child who has sort of a more intense challenge from the get-go, you know, whether that's in the form of a medical challenge, you know, anxiety, depression, a learning challenge, you know, that can be a big deal for kids, particularly early on in school. We really want to take extra time with that child. We want to use these same tools. We want to apply these same principles, but we want to take extra time. We want to make sure that they have a really robust scaffolding in place, that they have kind of an ongoing dialogue, and that we're able to help them pull out their strengths, because regardless of the amount of challenge that a child is facing, they also have strengths. They also have attributes that they can use to their advantage. And we really want to take extra time, work a little bit more with that child, with that more robust challenge, to find those strengths, figure out how they can plug them in to help them to move forward. It's a process. I mean, it's definitely a process. It doesn't happen overnight. But it comes down to connection, engagement, communication, and really trying to figure out how those strengths that that child has can be plugged in to help them move forward. And then start to develop that confidence, that courage, and that realization that, hey, that was really, really hard, but you know what? I did it, and I can do it again. That kind of thing.
Okay, I like that. Yeah. I really, really like that.
All right. We are talking about resilience. Our guest is Kate Lund. We will be right back. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585. Or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. Our guest is Dr. Kate Lund, and we're talking about resilience, and more specifically, resilience in our children, and how we can not only establish resilience, but then have it stay with them. You know, have it stay with them through their teens, through young adult, and for some of us, we may need to build our resilience at any age.
Really.
So anyway, so Kate, I know we've talked about a lot of things. One of the things really has to do with courage. From the standpoint, and I know you mention it both in your book as well as in some of your speaking, you know, if we have a child that maybe is lacking a little bit in that area, what are some of the things that we can do that will help develop courage by having them try new things or maybe pushing their limits a little bit?
Exactly. And, you know, courage and confidence go closely together, you know, but to help a child to sort of become more courageous from the get-go, we want to really make sure that there's a, you know, solid scaffolding engagement with a trusted adult, teacher, family member, somebody who can really help them to, you know, sort of push their limits, try that thing that might seem scary or out of reach, and particularly to try it again if they don't succeed the first time. I mean, if we think about a child, you know, who's petrified of the water, for example, and who just doesn't want to go in the water, does not want to learn to swim, it's going to take time to really help that child take that first step. But we want to keep encouraging them to take that first step such that once they try, you know, and perhaps have a bit of a positive experience, it might not be all positive, but they have a sense of, there might be something in this. We help them take that second step. And then as that process unfolds, confidence develops and they desensitize to that fear and pretty soon they're swimming. And that same principle can apply to so many different things. I mean, you know, I recently had a conversation with a family, and you know, there was a fear of walking across a bridge on a school field trip. And, you know, with the support of teachers, the child was able to take that first step out onto that bridge and eventually get across. And in doing that, they felt so good and so happy in a sense. And the next time something was hard or difficult in the classroom, they suddenly had much more confidence in taking that first step on their own because they had mastered something that was quite that scary. So it's taking that first step with a supportive scaffold and doing it again and again and again that will help a child develop courage and become more courageous such that their confidence increases as well.
I like the way you just explained it with the water. Am I hearing correctly that as a parent, I'm a parent myself, that we should work in phases, right, with the courage? That's what you mean, right? With
absolutely.
The step, one phase, and then just roll out a little instead of pushing the child to do it all in one go.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Because sometimes we're so overzealous, too, you know, that... You know what I mean, right, Alan? Yeah,
oh, absolutely. The visual I was getting as you were saying that was the difference between walking somebody out into the lake or throwing them off the end of the pier.
You are totally right. So phases. Okay, I love it.
All right.
Right, and, you know, also keeping the child's temperament in mind as you're going, right? For some children, it's okay to push a little bit harder more quickly, but for some, it's really not. So having a good read on that as a parent, as a teacher, as a caregiver is really, really important.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And, you know, there's a story that I'm aware of, and for those people that are a little bit more mature age-wise, they may remember that there was a Freddie Prinze Sr. I know many of the young people out there know that there's a Freddie Prinze Jr., but there was a Freddie Prinze Sr. who was the star of a TV show called Chico and the Man. And anyway, and as I'm saying this, Gabriella is shaking her head because she was not in the United States at the time in which this show came out. But the story that's actually very sad is that he was a young man that had such great potential, and everything had come to him so easy. He had never experienced failure, and he had never experienced rejection. He was incredibly funny. He was handsome. He became an actor at a very young age. Everything came to him so well, and the parents told this story afterwards that, anyway, he had a girlfriend who broke up with him when he was in his 20s. And he killed himself.
Oof.
Because he had never felt rejection. He had never failed at anything. Everything that he had tried, he was incredibly successful at. So I bring that up, and Kate, if you could talk a little bit more about that, which is if we're taking our child from the very, very beginning and they're never experiencing failure and they're never experiencing rejection, psychologically, you know, what are we doing to them if their first failure doesn't come until they're 20-some years old?
Right, and it's a really important point that you raise because, you know, we know that, you know, for kids, some kids, things just come much more naturally, much more easily to them. But then when they experience that first failure, they're completely, you know, not prepared to deal with it. And it sort of relates to this idea of intrinsic versus extrinsic motivation. And we really want to be encouraging our kids to operate from this intrinsic sense of being. We want them to be, you know, engaged in and doing things that they really, truly want to be doing, that they love, that they care about. And whether that means, you know, needing to take more time to develop those skills or what have you. But when we know that when kids are operating from an intrinsic sense, you know, whether it be motivation or otherwise, we know that there's that sort of stable sense of, okay, things might go well, they don't, it's okay. I can shift gears. I can try some flexible thinking. I can still move forward. But when kids are motivated or reinforced from the outside in, it's a much sort of less stable scenario. And when that kind of failure or when that obstacle hits, oftentimes much later on, it can really, really be devastating, and kids are not going to be nearly as prepared to get back up, dust themselves off, and move forward from a different angle. So it goes back to that idea of, you know, in those smaller ways, really letting our kids fail, letting them understand what it means to have to get back up and try again because something was hard the first time. Really helping them to understand that, you know, struggle is a good thing. It builds strength, it builds courage, confidence over time. So from that perspective, it's a really, really important thing to not have things come too easily for our kids. Because ultimately, in the long run, that's just not healthy.
But what in... How do you help the children, though, with the optimism if they do fail? Let's say a child that's opposite, one that doesn't succeed everything they try in, I'm talking elementary mm-hmm. school, how do you keep, by the time they're in fifth grade, how do you keep that optimism going of that child?
Right, and that's a great question as well. And so for that child for whom things don't come as easily, and they maybe have experienced, you know, failure or challenge around things that are important to them, like, for example, not making that baseball team 3 years in a row when their best friend has walked effortlessly onto the team. Yeah, that can be a really, really hard situation and scenario for any child, and definitely not an easy process to manage. But the thing that's most important in something like that is to help the child to see that they do have strengths, that there are things that they did well in tryouts, that there are things that, you know, they do well each and every day related to baseball and unrelated to baseball. But helping them to see the situation from a broader perspective, helping them to see, you know, how they can use their strengths in different ways, perhaps, to find different passions, different angles. We really want to help our kids to figure out where they fit best and where their strengths can be used in kind of leading them towards their potential over time. So really helping kids to, despite challenge, keep their lens focused on the things that are good in their lives, things mm-hmm. that are good in their day, the things that they did do well in tryouts, that sort of thing. Not an easy process.
No, I can imagine. Would you say that optimism and resilience are going hand in hand, just like courage and confidence? I was thinking of that while you were saying your answer there about optimism.
Right. You know, optimism for sure is a very important piece of resilience. Okay. It's one of the pillars that we outline in the book, and certainly is a very important piece of resilience because, you know, if we don't have sort of an fundamental sense of optimism that allows us to move forward when things get hard, get back up again when we get knocked down, you know, it's really ultimately going to be hard to move through and beyond challenge, which is how we're defining this idea of resilience, the ability to move through and beyond challenge. So absolutely, optimism okay. is a core piece of the whole resilience model as we're defining it here.
Thank you.
And in general.
All right. We have another listener question coming in. And again, I want to take this time to thank the listeners. I know that many of you work during the day, so when you take the time to send in one either the night before or first thing in the morning. I've had some people who have said that they appreciate the fact that we get the question asked and that they actually end up subscribing through iTunes and they listen for the answer later on. So We always want to try to get these questions in, but we also appreciate the fact that they take the time to send them in. So this one reads, I am a ninth grade teacher with more students entering my class each year with a diagnosis of ADHD. It is a bit frustrating because they are either overly agitated or on meds that are making them lethargic. How we teach children to be successful in school or in life, how do we teach children to be successful in school or life under these conditions? I would love to get your opinion on this as to where you believe we are headed in education. And by the way, this is from Bernice in Virginia. Thank you.
Great question. And it's true, you know, kids are definitely coming into school these days with a myriad of challenges related to things like ADHD and, anxiety and at times depression, that sort of thing. And again, it comes down to, really helping the child to kind of move forward based on where their strengths lie. Because despite challenges related to ADHD, for example, you know, all children have strengths as well that they can use to their advantage. And, you know, the hope is that they're going to be able to kind of engage with either a teacher or somebody at school or a family member to help them to pull out those strengths, use them to their advantage. Not an easy process, though, because, you know, there's so many competing demands, so many expectations for the child, as well as for schools and limited resources at times. But it really comes down to that engagement, communication, and helping the child to identify and use their strengths to their advantage. Because oftentimes kids who are struggling with something like ADHD, anxiety, depression, lose sight of their strengths. They just see themselves as not a student, not able to do whatever it is they're being called upon to do in school. And that can really, shut a kid down. And so we really want to be trying to find out what makes that particular child tick and how we might be able to help them use that to their advantage in moving forward and engaging more fully in school.
How do we help other children at school and actually everywhere in the world, adults to stand up for the underdog?
Right. That is such a great question and such an important question.
Because with the bullying and the anxiety, and I think it was yesterday that I saw another 12-year-old that committed suicide due to bullying.
It's devastating. It's devastating. And the thing is, you know, really from the get-go, and this is really a cornerstone of my work, is this idea of building strong social-emotional foundations across the board for all kids. And I really believe that this needs to be a part of curriculums everywhere from the earliest point in school to help kids to understand and respect individual difference, to help them communicate with kids who are maybe a bit different than they are or on the fringe or on the outside, instead of ridiculing that child and putting them down because they're different, really helping all kids to engage with that child and to understand them from a different point of view and perspective is so, so important. And along with that comes this idea of helping kids to build a strong sense of self-awareness, understanding themselves, understanding how they fit in to the mix, the larger social mix, the larger community mix, saying something when something doesn't seem right, when something seems off track. But most importantly, going back to your initial question, standing up for that child who's struggling. Instead of joining in and putting them down, really being able to see that child for who they are, not for the difference that they're portraying. So, so important.
But it's sometimes hard for those children because they often feel, I speak to children a lot too, like you, and it's just amazing that their heart wants to help them. You know, I mean, when you talk to them one-on-one, you see it at everything they're saying they really wish they had helped, but they're so afraid to be next in line. And that fear keeps them totally paralyzed. So what can we do in society to teach to embrace your own uniqueness? And that, because when we're older, let's be truthful, I'm kind of happy that I'm kooky and different today. But to tell you the truth, Kate, it took me a long time. And it might have been quicker if I had had the tools in my hand that you offer to today's children. So what is it, for example, for me, because I'm out there all the time for kids, what is it that I could tell them that even if they're next, the feeling of having helped that one child will leave them with such a good feeling, even if they're the target afterwards? But I have a hard time sometimes conveying that.
Right, and it's a hard thing, right? It's a process that has to unfold, but it's got to start with this early education around accepting individual difference, understanding these, you know, the fact that we're not all going to be the same, and really just kind of putting that out there, and helping kids, all kids, to sort of learn to appreciate those differences, you know, in themselves and in their peers. And that, from, you know, the earliest point, will make them more tolerant and accepting, is the idea. For those kids who are afraid to, you know, stand up for that other child who's being bullied, you know, really helping them to understand the framework in which bullying often happens, which is that bullies are often bullying because they ultimately don't feel that good about themselves, and they're taking on sort of a sense of artificial power. It's a bit of an abstract concept, but as we, you know, can kind of introduce these ideas to kids, and then on top of that, kind of talk to them about, you know, how it'll feel to stand up for that child who's being beaten down.
I like that.
And how good that would feel. But again, it's a process that has to unfold over time.
Well, Kate, I just want to thank you. I can't believe that we're out of time already, but thank you so much for everything that you're doing. And how can people who want to be a part of this, again, we have teachers that are listening, how can they get a hold of you? How can they get a hold of the book? And I say that's also for those teachers out there and those administrators, get this in your school. Kate brought up the fact that this should be part of the curriculum. So tell us how they can get more information.
Sure. So I have a website, which is www.PugetSoundSportsPsychology.com, where there's information on my work as well as on the book. And the book is also available on Amazon.
Okay, great. And for those of you out there driving that are saying, how am I going to try to spell Puget Sound, we will also have this on the Answers for the Family website. So if you go to our website, there'll be plenty of information in regards to Kate. Kate, again, thank you so much.
Hey, Kate, I just
Thank you very much.
Hey, Kate, I just wanted to mention, I really would look forward to having one of your stories and experiences on the Dare to Be Kind, so that we have parents and teachers on there too that could benefit so much from your wisdom.
Well, wonderful. Absolutely. That would be fantastic.
Thank you.
Can I get information on the
on
your website?
Yeah, what I will do, Kate, not to hold up the show, but what I will do is I will reach out to you on your website, okay?
Perfect. That sounds fabulous. Thank you.
All
right.
Thank you.
Again, thank you so much. And again, everybody, please be sure to put us on your calendar and tune in next Monday, when our guest will be Britton Devereaux to discuss the effects of screen time on your brain. Be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.